welcome to Saving Animals with Blank Park Zoo. I'm Ryan Bickle. On today's show, we're going to talk about Plant Grow Fly, our pollinator conservation project here at Blank Park Zoo. And with me today is Jesse Lowry. Jesse is our Director of Conservation and Research at Blank Park Zoo. Welcome, Jesse.
Thank you so much, Ryan. I'm happy to be here and to talk about bees and butterflies and how important their habitat is to help these very important animals survive. Like Ryan said, I'm the Director of Conservation and Research, and on this show, I always like to set the stage and talk about the role of a modern zoo in saving animals in the wild. We have an audience of over 500,000 people a year here at Blank Park Zoo, and so we think that's just an awesome platform to really spread conservation messages and help incite action and passion for the wild cousins of the animals that we have here at Blank Park Zoo. And if you want to get the most bang for your buck, taking care of your local environment is the way to go. And that's why we created Plant Grow Fly. We created Plant Grow Fly in about 2014. We got together with some other Midwestern zoos and talked about what kind of region-specific environmental problem we could tackle. And we talked about songbirds, we talked about water quality, and then we talked about monarch butterflies. And Plant Grow Fly is not just about monarch butterflies, but like with any conservation story or any conservation action, sometimes you need that charismatic animal that's really going to grab people's attention. And I'll tell you what, everybody loves monarch butterflies. And when I talk to people and do presentations for different groups, when I talk about monarchs, I get hundreds and hundreds of stories throughout the years of people seeing monarchs in their backyard and seeing maybe a roosting site where there are hundreds of monarchs in a tree. And there's some nostalgia about monarchs that really gets people's attention. And so that's why we created Plant Grow Fly, is to give people this simple, practical, easy conservation action that everybody can do by increasing habitat in our backyard.
Well, that sounds great. So could you explain or define what exactly is a pollinator?
Sure. So a pollinator basically is any animal that spreads pollen between plants, helping them to reproduce and thrive. And really, when we think about pollinators, bees are the heavy lifters of pollination. When you think about their body type, they're really fuzzy all over. And when they go to gather nectar and pollen from plants, the pollen gets stuck all over their abdomen and their legs. And that's how they transfer pollen between plants. There's actually 4,000 species of bees in North America and 300-plus species of bees right here in Iowa. And so bees are extremely important. You know, we can get this less liked pollinator out of the way right away. Wasps and hornets are also pollinators too. But I want to tell you right off the bat that creating habitat in your backyard is not going to bring any more wasps or hornets than you would normally have in your Iowa backyard. But they are pollinators too. And so we do need to make sure that we mention that. You know, everybody loves butterflies, and so that's why Plant Grow Fly really focuses on butterflies. But I'll have to tell you, they're kind of accidental pollinators. They're not the most efficient pollinator. When you think about their body type, they're not as fuzzy as bees. And so when they go to a flower to collect nectar as food, some pollen might accidentally get stuck on their legs and wings, and they'll transfer that to the next plant to help them reproduce. They do have taste receptors on their feet. A lot of people know that, and they use that to determine if this plant is going to be something good and healthy to eat. And so when we're talking about the body type, and we talked about how bees are fuzzy, well, moths are fuzzy, and so they're actually a little bit more efficient at pollination than butterflies. But they don't actively gather pollen like bees do, but while they're foraging, the grains will get stuck on the moth's body or tongue and accidentally get transferred to the next plant. Another pollinator that people don't think of is flies. We can thank flies for chocolate. Thank them for our chocolate. They really help pollinate the chocolate plant. And there's 120,000 species of flies. And so I think that's always very interesting. And when I talk to kids, I always mention that they should thank flies for their chocolate.
I'm going to do that tonight.
Okay, yeah. Tell your kids.
I'm going to tell my kids and tell my wife.
Because flies need a little.
Yeah,
they need a little love. They do. One of my favorite pollinators that people don't really usually think of is beetles. I think beetles are extremely beautiful. Fossils indicate that they were one of the first pollinators that pollinated flowering plants around 150 million years ago, like water lilies and magnolias. Hummingbirds is another important pollinator and something that folks really want to see in their backyard. Of course, the ruby-throated hummingbird is just a joy to watch. And we'll get into the nitty-gritties about how to plant this habitat in your backyard. But I have a strip of about 25 feet by 15 feet, a prairie patch in my backyard in Norwalk. And almost every single day, we can see hummingbirds flitting about. And so that has just been a joy and something that has been a direct result of planting habitat in my backyard.
Let's talk about, why are pollinators important? We've talked about what they are and what they do, but why is that important?
Pollinators are responsible for helping to produce one-third of the global food supply, one out of every three bites of food that we eat. And so folks, a lot of folks just have no idea how important they are to our daily lives. Without pollinators, many of our favorite food items like pears and apples and avocados and cherries and watermelon would simply be off the menu. And pollinators help to 75% of flowering plants to reproduce. And so as a zoo conservationist, I always like to pause here and point out that maybe we're not eating or using all of those plants that pollinators help to reproduce, but the entire rest of the animal kingdom is. Pollinators are foundational for the entire ecosystem, basically in almost all parts of the earth. And they're very underappreciated. And so they're helping these plants produce, they're helping make food for us, but they're also food themselves for other animals. We had David Mizajewski from the National Wildlife Federation come here as a speaker a couple of years ago, and he gave this fantastic story that I love to retell. A nuthatch, or a chickadee, in an Iowa backyard in a nest, from the time that it hatches out of the egg to the time that it fledges the nest, it needs to be fed 6,000 to 9,000 insects, and 90% of them are caterpillars, because caterpillars are nice and fat and juicy and full of protein. And so if you want more songbirds into your yard, planting habitat for pollinators is extremely important as well. And when you think about the production of these native plants that they're helping the ecosystem, that's going to stabilize soil, that's going to help with water infiltration, and it's going to indirectly help with the production of oxygen. And, you know, since we're such an agricultural state, I want to make sure that we include the economic benefits of pollinators. In the U.S., about $235 to $500 billion of annual global crops are directly affected by pollinators. About 75% of the crops are dependent on pollinators. Now, corn is wind pollinated, and so that's not really affected by pollinators. But when pollinators are present for around soybeans, the yield is affected. And so that really affects us here in Iowa. And when we think about our backyard gardens, we've got such great soil. Everybody's got backyard gardens and they love to grow their tomatoes and other things. Pollinators are really going to help with that.
So tell us how to get started. I think you've convinced us that we need them and we need to save them. So how do we get started and how can we go about saving them?
Yeah. And, you know, that brings me to just one more point that I want to make. Why do they need to be saved? Okay, so we know that they're important, but they are declining. And, you know, we've talked on the show about rhinos and elephants and giraffe. And when we think about what's happening to pollinators, a lot of the same things are happening. It's global climate change, disease, some modern agricultural and landscaping practices. But the big one is loss of habitat and feeding resources. Basically, we've gone from a state that was covered in over 90% the tall grass prairie, one of the most biological diverse areas in the entire world, to the most converted state in the nation. And so we need to meet in the middle and find places in this converted landscape, in this new normal, to give the pollinators the feeding and habitat resources that they need. And so that's where we get to what everybody can do in their backyards. You know, it doesn't matter if it's a single pot on your porch or an entire prairie restoration. everybody can do their part to save pollinators, and it's fun, and it doesn't have to be as complicated as some folks think. So let's get down to the nitty-gritty of how to plant pollinator habitat. First, you need to consider your space. Pollinator plants really like full sun, and when I say full sun, I'm thinking 6 hours or more of sun per day. And you want to find maybe a wind-sheltered area, and of course, you want black soil. If you have sand or clay or overly wet areas, you can go to our website, plantgrowfly.com, and figure out how to deal with that. And I always say, if you're new at this, start small. And every year you can add over time, expanding over time. So you find a nice sunny spot in your backyard. Then you need to think about what kind of plants you're going to get. And this is really important. Our native pollinators and our native plants have evolved together over millions of years to have this coexistence. And so we need to be planting the right native plants in our garden that will support our native pollinators. And I'm just going to refer to our Plant Grow Fly brochures, which you can also access on our website here, to give you a couple of examples. Pollinators need two different types of plants. A host plant is the breeding resource. And so, for example, monarchs need milkweed as their host plant. It's the only plant their caterpillars can eat, the only plant the adult monarchs can lay their eggs on. They also need nectar plants. That's food for butterflies. And so looking at our list of host plants that we have here on the Plant Grow Fly materials, black-eyed Susan, a lot of people know that plant. That's going to be the host plant to the silvery checker spot butterfly. We've got lupine, which is the host plant to the eastern-tailed blue and gray hairstreak butterflies. We've got false indigo, which is the host to the silver-spotted skipper, which a lot of people really love, that tiny little butterfly, and the wild indigo dusky wing. And so you can think about your garden in many different ways. Maybe you have a favorite butterfly, and so you're going to get their specific host plant. Maybe you have a favorite color of plant, and so you're going to look at this plant list and get your favorite color. Maybe you've got your favorite scent, and so there's lots of, it's like a puzzle that you put together. But when you find out what kind of plants that you want to make sure you go to a local greenhouse. You want to make sure they haven't been treated with insecticides or other chemicals. Because remember, this is kind of a shift of mindset. A lot of times in traditional gardening, we're trying to get all these insects out of our garden to make sure that it's clean and pristine. With a butterfly garden, we're trying to attract these beneficial insects. And so we want to make sure that our plants are organic and not treated with any insecticides. And so that's something that you can ask the grower, ask the local greenhouse, and that's really important.
So is it better to start with seeds then rather than plants that have already been started?
You know, I would say that if you're new at this, that you should buy plugs, that you should buy little plants from the greenhouse. Because when you plant seeds with native plants, sometimes it's going to be hard to know when they come up if it's a weed or if it's the plant that you are intending to plant. Also, it's fun to do both, plant a few plugs and then cast some seeds as well. And it's part of the journey. When the plants start coming up, then you can figure out which one is the plant and which one is the weed. And so you want to make sure also that you get plants that bloom throughout the entire season. So get a good mixture of plants that bloom in spring, summer, and fall. And again, all that information is on the Plant Grow Fly materials, because we've got different pollinators who are coming in throughout the entire growing season. And so that's another really important thing to consider.
What would be some advice you would give someone who's just starting out? You said start with plugs or baby plants. Is there anything else we should think about?
You want to just go ahead and print out some information or get a Plant Grow Fly brochure from our website and start small. Find your local nursery. Maybe give them a call first and ask them if they're going to have some of these plants, because these plants are going to be a little bit harder to find than some of your traditional daisies or tulips, what you're used to seeing in your nurseries. And go ahead. There's also some sample garden layouts on the Plant Grow Fly website, and you could just copy one of those. and start in the spring and just start a little garden and see how it goes. What you need to do to maintain a native planting like this is really just keep up on the weeding the first 3 years. After that, your garden will become what we call established, and the native plants should start choking out the annual weeds that we see in our yards, and there'll be a lot less weeding. And keep in mind, these plants are adapted to our soil conditions, to our climate. And so after the first 3 years, they're going to require less maintenance. They're going to require less water because they are adapted to, you know, Iowa has kind of severe weather at times. And of course they're perennials. And so they'll come back every year. Don't put any fertilizers or pesticides on. And they'll be good for not just butterflies and bees, but they're going to promote all kinds of biodiversity in your backyard. Another good thing is to not cut it down in the wintertime. People are used to cutting down those stalks and cleaning up in the fall. And if you look in my backyard right now, there's a lot to see. The dead stalks are standing. There's snow all around the dead plants because that's providing shelter for mammals in the wintertime. And not all of our butterflies get to go to Mexico over the winter like monarchs do. Many of them are, and bees as well, are already overwintering in these dead stalks. And so you want to keep the dead part of your garden up until springtime, right around Mother's Day, and then you can cut it down and let the new plants grow.
So some tips for maintaining your garden. You said you'll have to weed it for the first 3 years. What are some other tips?
You can lightly mulch it if you want to, but keep in mind, you're probably going to want to, you know, let the seeds from these native plants fall to the ground to reseed to really expand your garden. So if you are going to mulch, just do it lightly and make sure that you're using organic mulch that hasn't been treated with chemicals. And just check on it and keep the weeds down. Make sure it doesn't get too dry. Take your family out to see the different species of plants. Learn more about the different species of plants that you have there. And it'll be something different to see throughout the whole entire year. You'll see butterflies using it, hummingbirds using it, and then just not to cut it down over the winter time. Really controlling the weeds by hand weeding the first few seasons is the most important thing to do. You know, there's some other pollinator friendly practices too that we can talk about. Some butterflies love to bask in the sun. And so if you just provide an open spot in your garden, maybe with some dry, flat rocks, that will be a place for the butterflies to bask in the sun after a rain or, you know, the first thing in a cold morning. You can also provide some places for puddling. Some species like to get nutrients from muddy water and just places with mud. And so you can just leave a little muddy spot in your garden. A lot of people have seen the swallowtail butterflies doing that along the side of the road. You can also add a nectar feeder to your garden. Just a simple solution of water and honey, or some overripe fruit. And those are some other pollinator-friendly practices that folks will do in their gardens as well.
Okay, we're 18 minutes into the show, and I'm shocked you have not mentioned milkweed. So tell us a little bit about milkweed and why that's important for the monarch butterfly.
So the monarch is really our flagship species. I would say that the monarch butterfly is the bald eagle of this generation. The bald eagle, of course, was suffering and decreasing in numbers because of DDT, and folks came together from all different walks of life to ban DDT and to save this national symbol. Now we see that the monarch butterfly is declining, and folks from all different walks of life are getting together now to save the monarch butterfly. It's declined 90% in 20 years, and it's now being considered to perhaps be added to the endangered species list. And basically, you know, why it's declining is for a couple different reasons. One is loss of habitat in their overwintering grounds in Mexico. The other is loss of habitat in the Midwest and other places in the United States along the migration path. And so let's just first talk about the migration. It is truly a wonder of this world. Monarchs overwinter in fir forests just west of Mexico City in Mexico. and they cluster around these huge fir trees to stay warm. And yes, it's Mexico, but it's very high elevations, and so the winter is very cool. They might wake up from this half hibernation, or what we call torpor, to nectar from a couple flowers or take a sip from a stream. But basically, they're just huddling throughout the winter. In springtime, they start to get more active as it warms up, and they start to find mates and breed and travel en masse to across the border through northern Mexico, and they might get all the way to Texas. The first generation there will find milkweed plants, the host plant of the monarch butterfly. There's a ton of different milkweed species, and they can use all of them through the different parts of the United States. And the females will lay eggs on the milkweed plants, and the females will die. The next generation will emerge and travel again north, following the bloom of milkweed. And so now it's starting to get warmer a little bit north in Oklahoma, and they'll get to Missouri, they'll get to Iowa. And the last generation, it's usually between 4 and 6 generations. The last generation might make it all the way to Canada. And so we've gone through the summer now. Now we're about at September, and the last generation of monarchs emerge. And this is the really cool part. They're called the super generation, or super butterflies. The waning bloom of the milkweed and the shortening of days tells these butterflies to make the super generation. When they emerge, their wings are slightly elongated to fly long distances, and they're meant to live several months instead of a few weeks, and they fly over 3,000 miles sometimes to a place they've never been before, where their great-great-great-grandparents were, back to Mexico. When they arrive, it's around the celebration of the Day of the Dead, and there's a folklore that the arriving butterflies are the ghosts of their fallen ancestors. And so I think that's a really beautiful story as well. And so when monarchs are traveling north in the springtime, they need milkweed. They need their host plant. And that's a very important plant to add to our gardens. When they are traveling south in September, and that's when we see a lot of monarchs coming through, they need nectar sources. They need fuel for that journey. And so there's a lot of different species of milkweed that we can plant in our gardens. And folks are really used to seeing common milkweed in the ditches. And that's one that everybody can recognize. And that's one that's got kind of a bad reputation, too. I would say that I would not recommend putting that in your backyard because it spreads very aggressively and very easily. If you plant one stem, the next year you might have 3, and the next year you might have 15. I would recommend a species commonly called butterfly weed or swamp milkweed. And swamp milkweed does not need to go in an overly wet area. Both of these milkweed species will thrive in a backyard garden. They're beautiful. The butterfly milkweed is a beautiful mid-height plant that has a blaze orange color flower. And the swamp milkweed is a little bit taller. It gets to be perhaps 6 feet at the highest, and it's got a pale pink flower, and it smells like cotton candy. I planted some swamp milkweed out front of my front door a couple years ago, and I am not exaggerating. Every single day in the summer, if it wasn't raining, multiple monarchs covering it, and it was just a joy to see. You can get this milkweed at local nurseries, you know, just make sure, again, it hasn't been treated with insecticides. You would think that if folks are selling milkweed, that everybody knows that's for the monarch butterfly, that it would be chemical free, but you need to really be careful and make sure that it's not. And so Iowa is extremely important to the monarch butterfly. And, you know, Ryan, I think I want to mention a little bit about the Monarch Consortium, too, because the monarch is being considered for the Endangered Species Act. Iowa is really leading the way, and we've formed the Monarch Consortium. It's a coalition of environmental and conservation organizations, academic organizations, and agricultural interests. It's headed up by Iowa State University, and we're all coming together to make a plan for the state of Iowa to avoid the listing of the monarch butterfly. And people might be confused by that. Wouldn't we want the monarch to be listed because then it would have more protections by the federal government? Maybe, But if it got listed, then there would be all kinds of regulations that would be really hard for everybody here in Iowa. And so what we want to do is to prove to the federal government that we have it handled on our own. And basically what that means is we need to create acres upon acres upon acres upon acres of appropriate habitat here in Iowa. And Plant Grow Fly and the grassroots efforts of all of our 60 partner organizations that are with us at Plant Grow Fly is going to be really important in helping people create that habitat. And so other states along the migration path from Texas all the way to Canada are also making their state plans. And they're all going to be considered by the Endangered Species Act in the coming year to see if folks can figure out how to save the monarch butterfly without it being listed as endangered.
Tell us a little bit about monarch tagging.
Monarch tagging is a great way for folks to get involved in the migration. It usually happens in the fall. And you can get these tags from Monarch Watch. It's at the University of Kansas. They'll mail you these little stickers, and they have a serial number on them. And it talks about how to safely catch a butterfly with a net. And after you catch a butterfly, you can safely get it out of the net with your fingers and hold them very gently with their wings closed and affix this little sticker on their wing. You record the time and the place and you let them go. I recommend you say vuela, monarca, vuela when you let them go. It means fly, monarch, fly in Spanish. Mm-hmm. And then hopefully they'll make it all the way to Mexico. Now, in Mexico, they pay the folks there a good wage for finding these butterflies that have the tags on them. And they're not taking the live butterflies in the overwintering grounds. Many will perish, and they'll be kind of all over the ground in the forest. And then they can track the migration. So if they find a butterfly that was tagged at Blank Park Zoo, we'll get notified, and they can tell exactly how many butterflies are coming from the different parts of the U.S., which will inform us on where the habitat needs to go. And that's why we know how important Iowa is in the story of the monarch butterfly, because I think over 75% of all the monarchs that are found by tagging in Mexico come from north of St. Louis to south of the Canadian border, and that's us.
All right. Well, a lot of information there, and if you want to learn more about Plant Grow Fly or Blank Park Zoo, Jesse, where do they look?
They can go to plantgrowfly.com. It's also accessed on the zoo's website, blankparkzoo.com. Start planning in the winter months. You want to plant around Mother's Day. You can plant throughout the summer, and it can be really easy. So I hope everybody who's been thinking about this for a long time will go ahead and take the plunge and get your hands dirty and plant for pollinators this year.
Well, that sounds good. That's all the time we have for today. So if you want to learn more about Blank Park Zoo, head on over to our website, blankparkzoo.com. We have a lot of information about our events and conservation initiatives. You can check it all out at blankparkzoo.com. We'll see you next time on Saving Animals with Blank Park Zoo.